Welcome, folks. We'll let folks get settled and get started in just a moment. Thank you for joining us. We'll start in about 30 seconds. All right. Well, hopefully everyone who is joining us this morning has joined us. Welcome to NC Broadband Matters' first webinar of 2022, Understanding NC Broadband Grant Programs. This is an exciting time in the history of broadband and certainly an exciting time in North Carolina. We're so pleased to be joined today by Nate Denny, Deputy Secretary of the NCDIT Division of Broadband and Digital Equity, and Angie Bailey, Director of NCDIT's Broadband Infrastructure Office. Doug Dawson from CTG Consulting will be our moderator, and Catherine Rice, Program Director at the Coalition for Local Internet Choice, will join us for the Q&A. So we'll run through several minutes of a presentation and then reserve time for your questions. We invite you to use the Q&A function for that. And this webinar will be recorded and available on our website, ncheartsgigabit.com. Joining our inventory of 11 webinars and 4 podcasts that NC Broadband Matters has hosted since the start of the pandemic, with lots of great information about getting your broadband project off the ground. So without further ado, I'd like to invite Nate Denny to share his screen.
No, first it's me, Chris.
Oh, excuse me. Yes. I'd like to invite Doug to make further introductions of our wonderful speakers.
And then... Well, before I introduce our wonderful speakers, I just want to talk for a few minutes about the federal rules that did come out last week in the Treasury. You know, there are those sick people in the industry like me who read all 437 pages of it. And so there's a few really interesting things in there, and it's a good introduction to this conversation today. The Treasury rules were about the American Rescue Plan money. That's the $350 billion that came down to every township, town, city, county, and states. And that's money that can be spent for local infrastructure that is broadband related. And one of the listed uses for that money is broadband, along with anything else infrastructure-wise that's related to the pandemic. The final rules were a pretty good departure from the interim rules. And so what the new rules clarified is how you can use that money. And essentially the new rules get rid of the speed test. They allow you to not really pay attention anymore to the FCC broadband maps. And so what they do instead, because again, the original purpose of this money was to fix problems related to the pandemic, it came out with a list of ways that you can justify spending the money on broadband. It includes things like broadband reliability, broadband affordability, or just access to connections, and including if there's not connections available to a symmetrical 100 megabits. And so this is really exciting to me. I work in all 50 states. In rural areas today, folks pretty much already had this all figured out before, but the calls that I get 3 or 4 of a day are from cities going, can I use this money or can I use this money? This really opens the door for cities to come in and solve, you know, public housing that needs broadband, poor neighborhoods that need broadband, business districts that got devastated by the pandemic. I mean, any sort of things that are broadband related that the pandemic nailed in your city, this now opens the door for you to spend that money that way, unless those places you're trying to serve already have symmetrical 100 megabit broadband, in which case you probably wouldn't be trying to do this anyway. So that's a really important clarification, and it's brand new language, and these are the final rules. We're finally done now. Of course, it's never easy because they also came out with some very confusing words on how you use this money as matching funds, which are clearly written by lawyers. And so now there's a two-part test for that. And so it gets a little confusing. First off, this money can't be used to pay for something that's paid for by another federal grant. And that's not unusual as a matching fund. And so what that normally means is historically, you might get a 50% federal grant and you could get 10% state grant or local grant to pay for the same assets, but not the same piece of the same assets. So that's sort of standard language. But then they also have some very challenging language that says this money has to must address a need not met by the existing federal state grant. And we're all sitting here scratching our heads, not knowing what the heck that means. And so we're going to be spending the next 2 or 3 months figuring out what that means. So, however, if you do a project on your own and it's not a matching grant for another grant, then the first thing I talked about is absolutely open. I mean, cities, this opens the door for you to consider spending your money on your own projects. With that in mind, then, I do want to hand it over. We have for us, this is our first set of returning guests. So we have Nate Denny and Angie Bailey here. All the folks in North Carolina know them. And since Angie was last on, she's now the official director. So welcome to that role, Angie. And so they have a slideshow for us. And since I'm losing my voice, I'll hand it over.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks so much. I'm attempting to share that screen right now. So if somebody can confirm that that is up and running. You got it?
We got it.
Excellent. Excellent. Hi, I'm Nate Denny. I'm the Deputy Secretary for the North Carolina Department of Information Technologies Division of Broadband and Digital Equity, a new entity created by Governor Cooper to really drive home the relative increasing urgency of broadband as a part of DIT, the Department of Information Technologies mission, and to make the point that this is not just an infrastructure challenge, right? This is, I think digital equity is really key to Governor Cooper's vision and to our work. We've had a broadband infrastructure office for a long time. Now we have a parallel Office of Digital Equity and Literacy. So we really wanted to make clear that our mission reflected both of those elements. Speaking of the broadband infrastructure office, as Doug mentioned, yeah, I feel like when we started talking about having this event, we were hoping we'd be breaking news at the time that Angie has graciously agreed to be the permanent director of the Broadband Infrastructure Office after serving as the interim for a few months. But we couldn't wait for this to happen. We had to go ahead and break that news. So it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone here. But in this setting, I just want to reiterate my gratitude for Angie to stepping into that role and mission, and her work is going to be critical to everything we're doing here in the state and really transformational for so many North Carolinians. So thank you, Angie, for not freaking out and running for the exit when you saw how much we were getting in the budget.
I still can, right?
No, absolutely not. we've talked about this in this setting before, so I'll kind of move quickly through reiterating Governor Cooper's vision for digital equity in North Carolina. And he built a plan around addressing infrastructure, affordability, and digital literacy in his initial budget request sent to the General Assembly, proposing to use American Rescue Plan funds to close the digital divide in North Carolina. And, you know, as Angie and I have been talking to other states and national groups, stakeholders, federal agencies, you know, one thing that keeps coming up again and again is other states looking to the model we've got in North Carolina, which speaks one to the record that the Broadband Infrastructure Office has of you know, Angie and her predecessor, Jeff Searle, did incredible work moving this issue forward and planning in the absence of real significant funding, but also speaks to the comprehensive vision
that
the governor's.
Can I break in? Could we ask you to expand your slide to full screen?
Yes.
That would be where everyone will see it.
Are you just seeing part of my screen?
I've seen your entire screen. So if you take that to slide view.
Yeah. Man, I was making a great point too.
I know. There you go. There you go.
Here, I'm just going to do this.
From beginning.
No, from beginning, the very first button on the left. There you go.
Great.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm glad I've got tech advisors here to help the Department of Information Technology figure out how to run a slideshow. That's really helpful and a good look for us. But as I was saying, I think our relative competitive advantage to other states, despite the fact that we're the last state in the union to have a signed budget in place, and it speaks to, one, the great work that the Broadband Infrastructure Office has done previously, but two, and I think most importantly, the really comprehensive vision that Governor Cooper has set out here for addressing this problem in a holistic way, not just putting $1 billion in infrastructure, but really trying to invest in making sure that North Carolinians can afford the cost of high-speed internet, that they have the tools they need, whether it's a smartphone or a laptop, and have the skills they need, and that we've built a real digital equity ecosystem here in the state to help people get those skills and tools. So that was the plan. I'll be quick here, but the main metrics for success here, we want to go from the FCC's 95% connectivity percentage up to a real 98% of North Carolina households connected to high speed or with access to high speed internet. And that's going to involve obviously a much more comprehensive mapping approach, pushing beyond the FCC's data. We want to have 80% of households with internet subscriptions, and not just at a statewide average, but we want to hit that 80% target across demographic groups, because we know that Black, Latino, and Native American households all lag considerably behind white households. So we want to make sure that we're putting in the work from an adoption perspective to make sure that all communities have access to these investments and can realize the benefits here. And I think most importantly, we have a 100% subscription target for households with school children, right? Permanently closing the homework gap in North Carolina. The governor and the General Assembly, I think, came to a really strong bipartisan agreement here on how to approach this. And we ended up with about $970 million for infrastructure investment. That is $350 million in federal funds for the GREAT Grant program that's run about, I think, four rounds over the last few years, in addition to some funds from our state capital infrastructure fund that were already available to that program. So another $30 million in state money. $400 million for the new Completing Access to Broadband program, which is the state-county match competitive bidding process that we think is going to be allow the state and counties to be much more proactive and strategic about addressing needs in their communities. You know, the GREAT Grant process has connected a lot of homes. We've awarded about $55-ish million in that program over the last 4 years, and it's really made a difference, but it's extraordinarily prescriptive. The providers come to us, they tell us what households they want to cover, the speeds they're going to use, the cost per household. We spit out a score, we say, all right, you got 23 points. That justifies a 40% match to your grant. There's no strategy from the state perspective or the community, really. So we are really excited about what that CAB program represents. We'll be able to work directly with counties, identify a delineated area of unserved homes or businesses, develop together an RFP that allows the market to respond directly and allows us to start a negotiation. So I think that program is really going to give us a lot more flexibility to address this challenge. We've also got $90 million in stopgap solutions, because we know that fiber deployments won't fix everything. We're not going to be able to do fiber everywhere immediately. We're not going to be able to afford it everywhere. The governor's plan has always acknowledged that it's important to have all technologies at the table and all types of providers engaged if we really want to connect every household in North Carolina and get the adoption rates that we need. As all of you know, the ARPA funds come with very high explicit speed thresholds, as well as technology preferences. The ARPA funds from the State Fiscal Recovery Fund are very likely, when invested in broadband infrastructure, going to result in fiber projects. But we know that we'll need a broader range of projects to really fix this problem. There are going to be parts of the state where fiber won't make sense immediately, right? So that stopgap solutions is intended to allow us to address some of those small pockets of areas that need more creative solutions, really high expense areas, potentially allow us to invest in new tower construction to host wireless equipment, potentially upgrade state-owned facilities to make them more suitable for hosting, or doing feasibility studies and other things that have created barriers to making those investments in publicly owned towers to this point. We've got $100 million for a new broadband pole replacement program that will allow the department to reimburse communication providers that replace their utility poles in service of a broadband project. $1 million for mapping so that we can get a really accurate view at household level of who's served, unserved, or underserved across the state and make smarter investments, because that underpins all the work we have to do here. And then what I'm really excited about, we got $50 million over the next 4 years to build digital equity. We pushed for more, but it's a negotiation to get a signed budget, right? I think these funds will help us continue to expand on investments on digital literacy programming in communities to help evangelize the FCC's Affordable Connectivity Program, and make sure that folks know about those opportunities and enroll every eligible North Carolinian there, and build device support programs designed to get laptops into low-income households. And we got $15 million to operationalize the whole thing. So that's cool. Before Angie jumps into some of those programs and how they're going to roll out, timing and stuff like that, I wanted to also acknowledge the tremendous investment that the federal government's making as a part of President Biden's bipartisan infrastructure law. We already mentioned the Affordable Connectivity Program, an additional $14 billion into that program. We're glad that that program is going to have a little more longevity. I think we're waiting, tomorrow the FCC's rule comes out on with a little more detail about how that program transition is going to be completed. It started December 31st. The big concern here for us is the subsidy program that used to be known as the Emergency Broadband Benefit is going to be reduced from $50 to $30 a month. We know that will harm North Carolinians who enrolled at the prior rate. And so one area of focus for us that the governor has directed us very explicitly to address is how we can minimize or mitigate those harms for North Carolinians. So let me preview and ask for all of you that come to us with your ideas about how to help make sure nobody slips through that crack or loses access or the ability to subscribe because of the reduction in subsidy. The Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program is the major infrastructure investment fund. It's $42 billion that will go into, I think, two formula allotments, one for high-cost areas. That's about a tenth of the overall appropriation, and the rest will go to just everything left over. We don't know exactly what North Carolina's allocation will be here. We know it'll be at least $100 million. Our quick back of napkin math suggests that if we get just a numeric share of 1/53rd of the states and territories, this would probably bring about $880 million additional investment in infrastructure in North Carolina. Could be more, it could be less, depending on their formula and the numbers that the U.S. Commerce NTIA uses in coming up with those allotments. But, we're a very rural state. right, with a lot of hard to cover areas. So, I think that our unique challenges will create opportunities with these funds on top of the ARPA investment that the governor has already directed to address this problem. You know, there are a couple of interesting policy components here. Interestingly, I think this audience has talked a lot in the past about the ability of municipally owned networks to participate here. The infrastructure bill prohibits them from being excluded, right? So that's going to be a major change here in North Carolina, letting some of those entities that already exist have access to some of the federal funds that they haven't over the last few years. So I think that's exciting. There's $1 billion for competitive middle mile program, $2 billion for tribal connectivity, and then 3 digital equity programs, a planning and capacity or programs for planning capacity for which the state's designated digital equity authorizing entity can help build up some planning support. And then a $1.25 billion competitive program that the state can't play in, right? So again, our goal with the ARPA funds and with whatever planning funds we're able to access here will be to develop a really strong digital equity ecosystem so the state's in a position to help drive support into local communities instead of us trying to build some kind of top-down driven program. So also very excited about that, especially given the General Assembly didn't direct more toward the digital equity side in the first place. So these resources will be a huge help to communities across North Carolina. And I think that's it for me talking right now. Angie, do you want to jump in?
Sure. Thanks, Nate. I'm Angie Bailey. I'm Director of the Broadband Infrastructure Office. I think I probably know a lot of you all on the webinar today. I want to thank Catherine and Doug and Krista for having us. We realize, just before I jump into the programs, what a once in a lifetime opportunity this is for North Carolina to invest in broadband with these dollars. So I just want to kind of stress that we get the importance of this work and the opportunity, and we are working hard to get these programs developed and out there. So I think you all know, as Nate mentioned, we've got 2 federal program pots, right? The state fiscal recovery funds, which funds some of these project pots, capital project funds. On the slide here, just to mention, I know this still talks about the interim final rule from for the fiscal recovery funds that came out in May. Of course, the final rule came out last week. So we're reviewing that. The original eligible areas talked about speeds of 25.3. And we know that now the federal rule is much broader. And so we're kind of looking at these federal rules in light of our state legislation. And that's the balance. We still have to comply with what's in our state laws. So we're reviewing the new federal rule on SFRF. The other pot is capital project funds. That's also from US Treasury, also ARPA dollars. The state has applied to Treasury for those dollars. I believe it's $277 million in capital project funds. Right now, the way that our legislation reads is that will be folded into the great pot. The capital project fund rules are similar to the SFRF. It's basically building out capital projects. The eligible areas in that funding pot is locations with no wireline of at least 100 down, 20 up, still building to the 100 down, 20 up, and scalable to 100 symmetrical. So, but again, we have to, the federal rules, we have to apply those to whatever's in our state legislation. So that's what we're kind of digging through. We will be getting our guidelines out for the GREAT Grant Program. Actually, Nate, can you forward to the next slide? So the GREAT Grant Program, I think y'all are familiar with it. The federal program that we'll be rolling out is similar to what we've rolled out in the past with a few tweaks. The applicants are broadband providers, and we're essentially, incenting them to build out to our most unserved areas. So great grant. Those guidelines are being developed now. We plan to launch that program on January 31st. So we would ask you to please pay attention to our website, especially on the 31st, and we'll have those guidelines out there. Applications will be due on April 4th. So we're working to get the final guidelines, the application portal, and the eligible areas map all launched at the end of the month. And so again, that pot overall is $350 million with federal money. We really don't know how many applications we're going to get. We don't know if we're going to get $100 million. We don't know if we're going to get $600 million. So we don't have a particular cap tied to the award amounts. We want to see what we receive. This will be targeted at areas of less than 25.3. And we know that the federal rules are broader than that. But it is really important, I think, to think about, because I know we have so many people in this group really invested and really committed broadband. We want to make sure that those areas that really don't have any service get served. And I think if it was broader, you know, we would risk those areas never getting builds. So we'll see what we get in this first round. We'll see if we need future rounds. So great will be done first. The Completing Access to Broadband Program, CAB, is our partnership with counties, as Nate said. So that will be rolling out a bit behind. Great. Well, let me cover the point, sorry, in the slide. I'm getting ahead of myself. So it's a partnership with counties to build out to underserved areas in each county that wants to participate. Counties have to put money in, we put money in, and then we will either develop an RFP process that can be replicated in the counties. We're also looking at possibly if there's a way to kind of streamline through convenience contracts or that type of thing. So that's still being evaluated. And so we'd like to put out an expression of interest on the CAB program in February, start with a few pilot counties, probably in March or April, and then get that program rolling. Mapping will obviously be a big piece of that, and how we identify the eligible areas. And the CAB pot, again, is $400 million. So it's great, CAB, stopgap solutions, just kind of filling in gaps that are left. And then kind of simultaneous to that is our broadband pole replacement program, which is basically reimbursing providers for pole replacements. And that's still being developed. So those are kind of the four big infrastructure pots separate from the digital equity side where we have that $50
million. And if I can add, Angie, you know, I think we pushed really hard with the General Assembly to go for what we called Great Grants 2.0, right? We wanted to enhance the ability of that program to make better investments, and the General Assembly worked with us on that. We've now got higher speed thresholds consistent with the ARPA guidance there. So additional points for projects that exceed that 100 symmetrical or 120 target. We've streamlined the protest process. So the period of time that a provider gets to take shots at other applications is shortened now. We have opened it up to all counties because it started out just tier one economically distressed counties, then just tier one and tier two. Now it's open to tier one, tier two, and rural census tracts in tier three counties as well. So a number of policy changes there that I think will make that program even more impactful wherever its projects are awarded. And again, the CAB program just gives us so much more flexibility, right, to work directly with counties and approach these projects in a strategic way. And I think the federal match there is capped at $4 million per county. So every county should get an opportunity to work with us here and bring some of their ARPA funds to bear on this issue. And of course, you know, it's important for us to get a better sense of what demand is going to be for the GREAT grant process, see how many applications we've got that can start informing how we prioritize CAB county pilots and schedule every county, because we can't run 100 RFPs simultaneous to a grant program that's going to be changing the facts on the ground by the day. So that's why we're starting with GREAT, and then again seeking to identify those initial pilot counties for CAB. And stopgap and broadband pole replacement program still have some legislative tweaks that that likely need to happen. So those are probably looking at Q3 of calendar year 2022. Before program guidance is out and they're up and running. But we'll make sure to keep you and other stakeholders updated if that schedule shifts.
And I think just to add on kind of how to get more information, you know, again, the GREAT grant guidelines will be coming out in a couple of weeks. Once those are out, we'll be scheduling a webinar for potential applicants. I think we're considering whether we should have a webinar for a broader audience as well. So that's kind of coming up. The CAB program, and on GREAT grant, if you do have specific policy questions or any kind of very specific questions, if you could email us at greatgrant@nc.gov, that's how we will be taking those, because we will have an FAQ. You know, we expect a lot of questions. We will have an FAQ document that we'll be keeping running as we push those guidelines out and take questions on that. The CAB program, you know, we are reaching out to county managers directly right now. And we do have an email set up for that, cabprogram@nc.gov. That's CAB program. And so we've asked our county manager partners to please submit their questions to that email address so we can kind of get them all in one place as we're working on to develop that program. So that's that email address. What else was I going to say? And you know, we would encourage you to read the legislation, read the federal rules if you're interested in these programs, and you probably already are. And we will also be pushing out information on each of these program pots on our website. It should be up next week. We know people want more information, and so that should be coming up in a week. And I did see, can I jump into a few of these questions in the chat? I saw one on about...
Yeah, feel free. I'm going to ask them to you anyway. So
oh, okay. Sorry. Well, I won't skip ahead.
Angie, you've got enough to do without taking Doug's job, too. Come on.
So we really appreciate, I assume we have on the call, you know, kind of providers, local governments, consultants, and we just look forward to working with all of you on this opportunity.
Ready to jump into questions then?
Let's do it.
Sure.
All right. I guess I have some, looking at the questions online here, obviously some of these are timing questions, but let's start. One of the areas, since GREAT grant is going to launch right away and mapping is going to be much later, Do you envision the ability for localities to tell you what they think the speeds are for the GREAT grant program and then have the challenge process? Because I mean, we counties all know that they have areas with no speed where the current FCC maps show lots of speed that isn't really there. So
right. So yes, we did get a funding for mapping in the budget. Ideally, we would have been able to do the mapping work before we do these programs, as you know, I think the FCC had some similar experiences, but we don't want to hold up the money. So we will be launching a mapping RFP in February. We'll be requesting help to collect provider specific, more granular data on broadband availability. So that's kind of will be going on one hand. The GREAT grant program, the map that we'll have out for that will be, you know, census block data, which we know the limitations of that. We do still have some fully unserved census blocks. So I think that's really important, right? We do know that there are blocks in the state that are totally unserved. For our partially served blocks where we don't have granular data, We do have our broadband survey information that's out there. We're still encouraging communities to take that survey, but we will be incorporating that data into the process. And then the applicants themselves are allowed to submit data on areas that they believe are unserved, and which is how we've worked with the Great Grant in the past. So that's kind of great. The CAB program will be a bit different because we'll be working with the counties to identify the eligible areas, the underserved areas. And so that is something where we will have to figure out a process to take in data from county partners and work together on identifying those.
Thank you. The good news is localities can help you prove areas really need it. That's what's really needed there.
Yes. So.
As far as timing goes, it sounds almost impossible to go through that CAB program for all the counties in a year. So I assume that is likely to stretch into next year. I mean, it seems like it almost has to, right?
So
I think all of these programs are likely to be running on a continuous basis, continual basis over the next 3 years, basically 22, 23, 24.
Okay, so if you don't award all the money for Great Grant, there'll just be more rounds of Great Grant. Okay, very good. That's good news too. So,
Can I ask a quick question?
Well, let me really quickly make another point on Doug's question. Demand for these programs is going to inform how these programs should be funded moving forward, right? So if we don't get, $350 million worth of demand for Great Grants, we'll go to the General Assembly and say, look, as we suspected, the CAB program or the stopgap program or whatever is the most effective way we can make these investments most strategically. So let's redirect that funding into a pot that makes the most sense.
Excellent.
So that kind of rides on the question I had, which is kind of the big elephant in the room. It seems like there's this exclusion on what areas are eligible. With CAB or with Great Grant, if I've got that right, if an area has been identified for federal broadband grant money or state grant money, then they are excluded it from the, according to the legislature, they're excluded from being eligible. And if we all remember the RDOF grants, they kind of covered everything. I guess the satellite guys picked up what cable companies didn't pick up. So are there going to be any areas left for your grants, or are you thinking maybe if you have some time to work your maps, there may be more areas that are available? Because on the surface, it looks like what's left.
So I think having the mapping work going on is really important. I think that we'll see if the RDOF awards evolve, right? So not all of them, they're not really finalized, most of them. So what does that really look like? Will any of them drop off? I don't know. I think that's something we have to track. And then we know we have all these partially served blocks, right? And so I think that's the other question is, can we get data to show what's really happening in these blocks that are showing a serve that we know aren't fully served?
And that were listed as not qualifying for RDOF.
Right, yeah.
I think this is another area, though, where we see where demand informs our arguments moving forward, right? If RDOF, has as much of a chilling effect on provider interest in each of these programs as, I think we might reasonably fear it may, then that, I think, informs our conversations with the General Assembly, too, right? I mean, I think we have expressed the view, I think, very clearly that exclusions at this point without a shot clock for the RDOF provider, it's a concern for this program and our ability to connect every North Carolinian in a timely fashion. If the providers that are RDOF recipients are up and running in 2 years, which is the time frame associated with a Great Grant currently, then that's awesome. That's good, that's good news at the end of the day. But they have
6 years.
right. So anyway, we'll continue to have that conversation. And again, provider responsiveness to the Great Grant and CAB programs, I think, informs that debate moving forward.
Interesting. Very good. Can you talk a little bit more about the stopgap That's very interesting. One of the this is just me talking. It's an individual, but the Great Grant Program has not been particularly friendly to little tiny providers, little wireless guys, and all. There's a lot of hoops to jump through that some of them can't jump through, and that's the sort of folks that tend to fill in these little pockets. So, do you envision that being a friendlier grant program for little ISPs? Because these are the pockets by definition that the big guys are not looking at almost, right? So,
I think it has to be. I also think that program, as it's written up in statute, is open to nonprofits and education institutions and municipal governments as well. So there may be, I think there's a range of more flexible opportunities that come with that program. Like I said, I think we really intended to be a catch-all for anything that's not going to be a multi-million dollar fiber deployment, right? Because we know that is going to have to, we're just going to have to move beyond that narrow approach if we're going to connect everybody in a timely fashion. I also think it's worth pointing out that on the RDOF exclusion question, right, we don't count satellite providers against the map, right? So we're not excluding those parts of states. So I think there's a few areas of different types of providers that I think can step into the gap here for a wide range of possible projects. And so as we get some of the funding issues, get some of the technical legislative questions addressed with the General Assembly, and align the right funds to this pot, we'll have enough flexibility, particularly in the Coronavirus Capital Project Fund, capital project guidance, to do a really, really diverse range of projects.
Also, just to add, Doug, on your point, I do think that there's kind of a space, an opportunity for figuring out how to support our smaller providers in, you know, the midst of all of this funding that's available, right? I don't know that we can do that as an office, as the funders, but, you know, we've had some of our great grant recipients work with our COGS to do kind of grant administration or other groups. And I think that that's it's an opportunity and a challenge, right? Because we, we've got the state rules, but now we also have federal rules. So having our smaller providers participate, I think they're going to need support. So hopefully that's, you know, there's people out there looking at that and kind of looking to help with that. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, no, that's good. As long as you're going to be flexible, that's all we can ask for. Your slideshow had the word partnership in it a few times. And in North Carolina, there's only been a handful of true partnerships between communities and ISPs. Can you talk, either one of you, about what you might mean by that? Is that simply communities giving their ARPA money to someone, or are you thinking more of real partnerships? Just curious about what your thoughts are and what that might look like. So,
yeah. So in the Great Grant Program, there is actual partnership language. So there's actually a definition for partners that I don't have right in front of me because it changed since the last round, but it does allow for communities to partner with ISPs to be part of the project, and they can help provide matching funds or access to assets and things like that. So that's kind of a legal definition of a partner.
And that is a change from last time. That's good. Yeah, I haven't seen that new language.
It was in there before, but it's been tweaked a little bit.
Okay.
And so that there's that opportunity and great. And then, well, I refer to counties as partners and CABs because it is a joint, the CAB program being new, that is a new opportunity. So that's how I've been referring to it.
Can I pick back up on your stopgap question for just a second, Doug?
Sure.
Yep. I guess I was wondering, Nate, you had mentioned that you're going to have to go back to the legislature, I guess, for more terms on stopgap. So maybe we wouldn't expect anything there until Q3. And I was wondering about stopgap because it didn't seem as conscripted in the legislation as the other programs. And now that we've got this fantastic final Treasury guideline that's saying if an area doesn't have 100 by 100, you can go ahead and build broadband there. Whereas, you know, CAB is less than 25.3, and I think Great Grand is less than 10.1. Do you think there'll be any opportunity in that stopgap program to allow for infrastructure builds that could address more than 10.1 areas or 25.3 areas?
So I think the legislative language on stopgap is tied to the state's definition of unserved areas. I should mention that Great Grant now, with these policy updates and the language, is also now tied to 25.3. So 10.1 is completely completely gone. So that's a small improvement, right? We need to push beyond that in the future. And I think after we make these investments, we'll have that opportunity to move even further and really start to address underserved communities across the state too. But I think we need to, you know, I think not to sound like a broken record, but how we approach stopgap measures, I think, will also be defined by the level of demand and interest in Great Grant and CAB, right? So we have as we get those great applications in, we start working with counties on a one-by-one basis to identify their priority unserved areas, and we complete our mapping process, we'll get a much better, more informed view of where we need more flexible tools.
Thanks. Really great question in the Q&As. You're talking about doing county by county with the CAB program, but will you be considering multiple counties doing regional programs, you know, together?
That's a great question, and it's one that we've raised for the General Assembly. I don't think that works currently in the statutory structure, just the way the reimbursements or where the funding is set up. But I think that would be I think that's worthy of a lot more exploration. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned. I think stay tuned is an answer to a lot of them.
Yeah, I'm just going to start saying that to everybody.
We got to bring them back.
Let's see. A lot of Q&As, if you all want to read through yourself, they're getting very technical and deep. And so
there was one question that I saw, really a comment, and I can't remember who provided it, but it was on the affordability issue. And it said, can't the state just create its own $20 supplement, right, per month to help mitigate the harm caused by the reduction in benefit for the now affordable connectivity program? And so, you know, I want to give a round of applause to whoever said that, because that's absolutely what we need to be doing. And Governor Cooper's initial plan called for $420 million to go into a subsidy program that would extend the initial, this is pre-ACP and pre-Biden infrastructure bill and all that, but would extend the EBB $50 a month benefit for 380,000 North Carolina households that are eligible for 4 years. The General Assembly did not fund that and focused instead largely on infrastructure and also a little bit on digital equity, but this will continue to be a place where we push. And in the meantime, you know, we can't do that unilaterally. We would need legislative authority to go do that and an appropriation to go do it. But we will continue to make that case and use every bit of our resources to have an impact on the affordability question, whether that's Great Grants. And one of the best things, I think, in the final rule is a clarification that any participant for those funds, a subgrantee, has to participate in the Affordable Connectivity Program. Among the policy changes from the infrastructure bill is the Affordable Connectivity Program has to cover any plan offered by a provider, right? So they, you know, there's no kind of capping data or minutes or any of that stuff. And so that's another a big win here. We're going to use some of our digital literacy funding to help broaden the news, right? Make sure every North Carolinian is aware of this opportunity. We're looking at potential AI solutions for digital navigators, other things that we as a state can do, or supporting local digital navigator efforts. Anything we as a state can do to help make it easier for more North Carolinians to participate in that program. We'll continue pushing on the level of funding. We know, I think the average cost of monthly service is in the $60, $65 range. So, and we know that after $15 a month, you really start seeing impediments to adoption, right? And so there are going to be families that that have that drop of $50 to $30 a month for whom that their new monthly charge is going to be an actual problem, right? So that'll be an ongoing issue that the state has to address, and one that is a huge priority for the Cooper administration and this department.
Next question, which you may not have an answer for, but are there any timelines on any of these programs? And the concern is that there's a huge amount of supply chain issues right now, that even if you award somebody the money, it might take them a heck of a long time to build it. And so are you aware of any already, are there any baked in timelines that we're gonna have to deal with somehow, or are they all gonna be flexible?
Angie, you wanna chime in?
Well, yeah, I would say the ultimate deadline, you know, the federal deadline is that the money has to be spent by the end of 2026, has to be encumbered by the end of 2024. And then we've got our state, I think that's the be all end all, right? We have some state rules as well, but that's what we will need to comply with, make sure this money gets out there. We understand that there are a lot of supply chain issues. So I think we're very aware of that with, for example, the Great Grant Program, looking at how, you know, what's the real timeline to build once we get an award. So we will keep watching that. I wanted to kind of address some of this discussion about the 25-3. Do you mind?
Sure.
Can I make one other point about supply chain real quick before you jump on that?
We like you two jumping in to give us even more information.
Okay.
So on the supply chain question, we're aware that there's a considerable wait for particularly smaller providers to access the materials they need. And we are talking to manufacturers and figuring out how the state can help address some of those problems. I think we put out a survey to providers a couple of weeks ago to start trying to gauge interest in each of these programs and gauge how providers are thinking about these risks as they approach our programs, and have started to get some excellent feedback. I would encourage this audience, if you work with a provider, if you come from the co-op community, please get in touch with us and we can talk about that. The last thing we want is for a provider to not pursue a grant application because they're concerned about supply chain issues disrupting their ability to execute, right? So we want to be having these conversations on the front end and figuring out how the state can help.
Very good.
Angie, you wanted to say something about speed?
Yes, she did. Yes.
Yeah, so I'd say there's a lot of discussion around the 25-3 threshold. And I guess, I understand that the federal rules being broader, that there's a lot of great things about broader rules. But my personal feeling really is that if our eligible areas was anything less than 100 symmetrical or 100 down, 20 up, I really don't think that providers would choose to build to those areas of less than 25-3. And now I kind of said this before, but I just really want to stress that. So even though the GREAT program is more restrictive in this, the areas being less than 25-3, I really think that's the way that we're going to get those areas built to. So I think that's really important. And, we may see evolution as these programs move forward and areas get served.
Can I add to that, Angie?
Yeah.
The economics typically are that the companies prefer to serve the dense areas rather than the less dense areas. And that's why we have all these gaps.
Right.
So I think one of the reasons why the Treasury came out with that rule is because they wanted to allow some of these companies, when they serve, in order to serve the 25-3 areas, to be able to overbuild, to hit some of the areas that are already served so that they can help pay for the less dense areas.
Yeah. So it's more economical. Yeah.
And it's the economics. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they'll serve the 25-3 areas if you ask them to, as long as they can get to the other areas.
Yeah, I know.
That's the thinking. Anyway.
The other thing I wanted to mention is, and there was a mention of building only to 25.3, but I think like if an area has 10.1 and building just to 25.3, but I think that in general companies are, a lot of companies, if they're building, they're going to be putting in fiber, you know, at least on the wired side. I did have one more quick thing. I want to make sure I mentioned that School of Government does have regular, or at least they've had regular sessions on ARPA funding. I believe they're going to have more sessions now that the final rule is out. So as far as local government sorting through some of these questions, I think they're still an important resource to get their take on it all.
My next question, I believe, is going to have a jump in here from Krista, because we got the question of how will these programs work in partnership with RDOF, and Krista asked if she could not jump in to help answer that question.
Doug, thank you. No, I was actually trying to clean out your queue.
Oh, that was for me?
It was for you, Doug. Yes.
Oh, then I guess you did not have an answer. Okay. I misunderstood there. So you're not going to answer it, are you?
Ask the question though, Doug.
Yeah, the question is, you know, how is this going to work with RDOF? I mean, RDOF, and Nate actually described it already, and I describe it as Swiss cheese. You know, there's a census block that serves right next to one that's not, right next to one that is. When you map it, it's going to be really hard to fill in the holes in the middle. So, you know, any just thoughts on how, even if the RDOF is awarded, how the heck we get all those holes served? So, and I know the answer is you need somebody to come and suggest a solution, but that's the challenge we're seeing nationwide. It's a really, I mean, the FCC did us no favors, so that's for sure. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. I mean, I think it does fit that strategy. I don't know if it's a strategy or just a reality of these holes, these Swiss cheese areas. You know, I think the incumbents that are around those holes do have an advantage because they have assets in the area. You know, I don't know if that's good or positive or negative, but that's just kind of a reality. I think that we'll, you know, we'll see as we get these applications what it really looks like.
I'd like to follow up one. We're getting near the end of time here, but I want to follow up with something that I thought I heard Nate say. You said that maybe the state won't count satellite served areas as served so that they might be eligible for these grants. Did I get that right?
Currently, yeah, state law only excludes terrestrial awards under RDOF from consideration for state funds.
There's a whole lot of communities in Western North Carolina are glad to hear that.
Angie, did you want to provide a clarification? I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, yeah, our definition of broadband service is terrestrial service. And so our take is that would mean that areas with satellite would be considered unserved and therefore eligible.
Oh boy, there's two or three counties out where I live that will be very happy by that answer. Yep, so very good. You know, we have a whole lot of questions in here that we might consolidate and actually send to you to see if you want to put into your Q&As or your...
That would be super.
Because there's a lot of great questions here.
Yeah.
We could be on, and a lot of them are things you're not going to answer until later. I mean, I can tell by reading them. So, but we'll consolidate these and get them over to you for your consideration. Krista, do you want to come in and wrap it up and tell them who we are and where they can find this and all the good stuff.
And yes. Also like to invite Nate and Angie back again.
Oh yeah, I think we're going to want to come back one more time after these things are planned and actually out and running. So
yeah, there's no question about that. Thank you so much, Nate and Angie, for being part of the event today. And we're excited about communities' energy to go forth and plan and build great broadband. To catch up on everything you heard today, including the slides that Nate presented and Nate and Angie presented, they'll be on our website ncheartsgigabit.com as well as today's recording and all of our previous sessions. So thanks very much for joining us today. Appreciate the lively discussion and look forward to seeing you all again real soon. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Bye.